This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, a special episode today, Tom, because we have got Trent from not only Lego Masters Australia Season 2, but also Toy Power Podcast, which is an awesome podcast out of Adelaide. Trent, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, you're
Thank you for coming
welcome.
On. Regular listeners will know that I've been a fan of you all season. You aimed for the stars, your pirate build at the end. You were robbed. I swear, because that took me back, man. That made me a kid again. Looking at that, I knew exactly where you were coming from with that stuff. So thank you for joining us.
No worries. Yeah, look, that pirate build was so much fun. And really, like, we were trying to create, or certainly I was trying to recreate the vibe of going to those Lego exhibitions that toured the department stores back in the late 80s and early 90s that were just so amazing. And these larger than life builds, these wonderful characters that they had. We may have bitten off a little bit more than we could chew in the 28 hours, and that might have been part of the reason we didn't get the win, but so much fun doing that. And I'm really glad to hear that it did pull on the nostalgia heartstrings for a lot of people that saw that build.
Yeah, it definitely did. And what you said, the department store exhibitions, that is exactly what I felt when I saw what you were doing. It just took me straight back there and, you know, trying desperately, you know, at the end of those exhibitions where you were sort of walked through the store part where you could buy things and, we were trying to reach for the stars. Can we have that big pirate ship? And Mum would say, no, you can have that small ambulance. Going, aw.
So how long have you been building Lego? Because everyone on that show clearly has been building it a while, but I think some people were coming with a bit more background than others.
Yeah, this is a fascinating tale. I have collected Lego. I mean, I played with Lego all my life, and I got back into it as an adult in 1999 when Star Wars Lego was a thing, and I started getting a few sets to build, you know, for the instructions, and treated it like a collectible. You know, I'd build the set and then I'd put it up on the shelf, and that was that. And when Lego Masters Season 1 came out, I was like, wow, this is such a great show. But my expertise in building Lego was buying a set, building the set, putting it on a shelf. So that was really all I did. And we actually had Bilzy come on and chat to us on Toy Power. And he said at the end, he just goes, it was such a fun experience. You know, you should give it a go. And I thought, okay, well, why not put in an application? And the application process is obviously all about what you do with your My Own Creations or your mocks and free building. And I'd never done any of that. So I had to actually build something for the audition. And it was this tiny little spaceship that I just put together in half an hour so I could photograph something and put it on. And as I got further and further in the process, they were like, you know, can you show us some of your mocks? And the only thing I knew for mock was from my toy collecting, which is mint on card. And so I had to actually Google what a mock was. So I had done very little creative building before I set foot on the actual Lego Masters set. And Josh had done even less than me. So
really?
It was a bit of a baptism of fire for us. We really had to learn and come up with ideas and strategies. And the Cinderella build was a bit of a turning point for us where we failed to convey the story. And we regrouped after that and said, look, how can we tell really, really clear stories so that Brickman can't kind of get us again on that criteria? And that's when we then built the birdcage with the cats.
Yep.
And I fell into that kind of character building. But that was all learned while I was building literally on Lego Masters. I had none of that experience from beforehand.
That's phenomenal.
This is inspiring to hear because I'm in the exact same boat you were a year ago. I would love to go on the show. I have plenty of people around me telling me I should go on because we have a Lego wall here at home. Like we covered it in base plates and we have minifigures stuck up and there's a lot of Lego here. But I'm in the same boat. I've never really done any MOC, well, not for a long, long time. And I'm nervous. So you're right, just jump in and go for it.
jump in and go for it. I tell you what, I mean, by the end of that finale, we had built for 147 hours on the show. So just imagine, and that's not sorting. You've got all your bricks there, all ready to go. So it's 147 hours of pure creative building. You can also build in your downtime. Lego mm-hmm. will give you a kit. It was basically a huge suitcase you took to your apartment. You could build in your free time. You learn so much in that time. If you've got a bit of a creative bent, or you've just built the sets that Lego have given you and you kind of know how things fit together and you know how to use elements to create things, I reckon anyone can do it. If you're passionate about it and you love Lego, get in there, put your application in. You've got nothing to lose. It was one of the best experiences of my life. Yeah. The friends I made on the show, the experiences I had, just get in there, give it a go.
There you go, Tom.
All right. All
there
right.
you go. Say,
look, you mentioned making friends. Who are you still talking with? And is it Jordan?
Ah, yes. Oh, look, we did catch up with Jordy. He was great. He actually featured as the runner in the Above and Below build, which was cool. And we were praying that Damien and Andrew would use that Jordy brick before we got eliminated. And every time we go, come on, use the brick today. I don't know if we're going to make it through. We want to see Jordy. Jordy was great. We actually hung out with Jordy a little bit offset. We caught up with him after we finished the shoot and had a few drinks. So he was really, really cool. But in terms of the contestants from season two, we hang out with everyone.
That's awesome.
We've obviously in a bit of a different environment at the moment with social distancing. But where we can, we've been able to have the contestants, the Adelaide contestants over here. We watched the finale together at place with Summer, Iona, Josh and Jodes.
Yep.
That was really, really cool. But we hang out on Messenger and do instant messaging with everyone. We have Crossword Club because one of the things we did while we were waiting to go on set was do crosswords. Mm-hmm. And so every couple of Fridays we get together, put up a crossword on Zoom and do that together. So, yeah, we hang out a lot. We share videos, we share stories, and pretty much there's a chat going, you know, every day.
It definitely awesome. Seemed like it. I mean, the first season also seemed really positive, almost collaborative to a certain extent. Obviously, it's still a competition. But this season, like it genuinely felt like there was friendships being built, didn't it, Tom? Like just on screen, it felt like everybody was behind everyone else.
That was definitely real. And, you know, they there were moments where, you know, I was doing stuff with Damien and Andrew, you know, where they swept all the minifigures off the wall to do their final robot battle in the Colosseum. I was there doing that with them. And then I thought, oh, no, actually, that's going to be confusing for the audience to see me in there having fun. So I stepped away and let them kind of do it. But there's a lot of moments that probably got cut because, you know, obviously the editors didn't want it to be too confusing about who was paired up.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was a moment in the Star Wars episode, and it was funny because we would go over to Damien and Andrew's place and Jodie would come along while we were shooting and we were watching The Mandalorian as those episodes were coming out live. And I think we watched it the night before that Star Wars build. And you know, Josh knows Star Wars, but he's not a massive Star Wars fan. But Andrew was a huge fan. There was a moment that we just embraced in that episode and we were jumping around and just laughing at you know, the Lego brick pit. And so there was really that camaraderie even between teams. It kind of got edited out a little bit, as you can understand.
Yeah.
But we hung out. We'd go to movies together. We'd go to dinners really, really often and go to the museum and hang out. So those friendships were real to the point that you didn't want anyone to get eliminated. And obviously, it's a competition, but it was sort of, everyone wanted everyone else to build the best thing they could build.
Yeah.
And if that meant helping someone to let them reach their potential, you would help them. So, you know, that rotating dance floor that Josh came up with for our Cinderella build, you know, Andrew helped him come up with that mechanism, how the parts would fit together, how the gears would work. And people had no hesitation in, you know, helping someone reach their potential. And I think that was the spirit. Although it was a competition, everyone wanted everyone else to do the best that they could.
And I think that's what makes the show different to other, I guess it is a reality show, but it's more competition, isn't it? It's a competition show. Is that, there was a competition, but it was just so enjoyable to watch. You'd be watching it with a smile on your face no matter who was on the screen because it just is so feel good. A perfect time for this season to come out, right?
Oh, exactly. And it resonated, you know, like, and adults have been saying that, you know, what a feel good show to watch. They're, you know, like, I guess reality TV can tend to play on the drama between contestants. Mm-hmm. That can be a thing. And Lego is not about that. Lego Masters is all about the creativity, the fun builds. And at the end of the day, they want to showcase the best builds, right? Like that makes good viewing. The journey, of course, is an important part of that and how you get to the build. But you want good builds at the end of the day. And I think in that environment, that's what we got. But look, it came at a great time with a lot of people being indoors, a lot of kids and a lot of parents trying to find activities for their kids to do, and a lot of inspiration. Mm-hmm. That I heard lots of stories. I've been chatting to lots of kids and lots of mums and dads that are saying, you know, the show has really inspired my child to go out, get dust off the old Lego and build their own creations. And that's so wonderful to hear. And we saw a lot of people doing the competitions or doing the daily challenges that Nine put out on their website.
They were fun.
And you'd even see like little inspirations from the builds we did. So people would build a little cowboy and a cowboy rider, and people would be doing the faces and practicing those character faces and then asking me to comment on it. And that was just so wonderful. And every team had their fans and their followers that loved what they built and would kind of emulate or try and do what they did. And that was just so wonderful and heartwarming to see that we had inspired and helped, I guess, in a time of that's not a very nice time to go through, that people could attach to the show and find enjoyment in something they could do at home with their family.
There was obviously a big theatricality aspect to the final reveal of all of the builds. What was one of your favorites? You know, whether it was the building that shook on the shaker. I can't remember what it was called. It's called the Shakerama or
something.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Or you know, exploding things going in water. Standing on the set, what was the thing that was the most impressive to watch?
That shake plate was so much fun to do, just because everyone had a different approach. And at the start, they put that little plate of food on the shake plate. And when it wobbled off, we're like, oh, my goodness, look at the power of that thing. Look at the power of that mechanism. We didn't know if that was setting one, if that was setting five, setting 10. So we had this is going to be insane in terms of the way that thing moves and how are we going to kind of combat that and deal with it. And everyone kind of had a slightly different approach, which was really, really cool. And in the end, it was just pure weight that kind of defeated the shake plate, which was something that the testers kind of didn't, you know, foresee. I think Alex and Jackson's final model weighed 40 kilos. So that was a lot of fun. that was, you know, just crazy the amount of bricks they laid in that time. The explosives episode, I have to say, because we'd seen season one and they had a few different elements, you know, they had the dropping and the exploding and the baseball bat and all those things. Whereas this was all, everyone had three explosive charges they could place in the model. There was a real excitement because that's just not something you can do at home.
True.
Yeah. You know, you probably can if you're on Mythbusters or something, but it was certainly nothing that we had ever done. So I think those challenges where you were doing something you'd never tried before were really, really exciting. Like even the hanging brick, super, and the above and below, super exciting. And they always seem to come up with new ways. And one of the funniest things we had was when they were coming up with all these crazy ideas and they were just getting harder and harder, we had this running joke that one day they were going to get us to build underwater. And you can see our reactions to when they revealed those tanks. And it's like, they've done it. They've done the crazy thing we thought we were going to have to do. Thankfully, we didn't actually have to put it together underwater.
Oh, my goodness.
What we had envisioned. But they were all, I think all of those ones where, you know, it was something so different and we had to problem solve and you saw the panic in the other guy's eyes as they were going, oh no, how do I build underneath the table? I think that just that element was so much fun.
Oh, look, I got to ask you about passions, right? So the Star Wars episode, obviously the editors made a big deal out of you having a little nerd out, which to anyone who's not a nerd looks like an extreme moment of this is the peak of your life. But I imagine that looking at the collection of toys behind you, that it's one of many moments. So, if, you know, nerd is another word for passion and this sort of stuff. That moment when you jumped up and down, my missus turned to me and said, that's what you do when you go to Comic-Con. So I really get what other moments have you had, like nerd-wise, where something's just blown your mind? Because I imagine walking into a brick pit of Star Wars stuff would be pretty high up there. But, you know, what other things?
Yeah, look, it was a fantastic moment, obviously. And just to put that moment in context on Star Wars, I was 100% certain there was going to be no licensed property builds in this competition.
Sure. Okay.
The contract was very specific around, you know, you can't go into a build and just build an X-wing, right? Because that's a licensed property. So there were restrictions around what you could do in that space. So I just had ruled out anything like a Star Wars build. You know, you imagine if they'd driven in a 1989 Batmobile and gone recreate that or something. That would have blown my mind. But to go back to, I guess, other kind of big moments in my life, I attended the 2011 San Diego Comic-Con. And as a big toy collector, I got to, you know, so you can go and see Steven Spielberg present on the latest Tintin film that he's working on with Peter Jackson. That's in the big hall. And everyone wants to get in that big hall. But as a toy collector, it was, for me, Comic-Con was all about going to see the toy booths and see what Mattel was doing, see what all the toy companies were up to. And I'm a member of a He-Man community called the He-Man.org. It's run by a wonderful gentleman called Val Staples. And he's really big in getting the He-Man community together. And he coordinated an evening at Hennessy's Irish Pub in San Diego after one of the days. And we all went to Hennessy's, all the Masters of the Universe fans, and they brought in, you know, Four Horsemen, who do all the sculpting of the He-Man toys today. And they've been working on He-Man since 2002. So they've got about 18 years of sculpting He-Man toys for adult collectors. They were there chatting to those guys. The Mattel executives were all there. So the marketing managers, and Bill Benneke was there. And so I chatted to Mattel, the ins and outs of, you know, He-Man, of DC toys, of all that. And I'm meeting the sculptors. I'm chatting to the sculptors that have been producing toys for 18 years. And that was a moment where I'm in the room with these guys. I'm super passionate. I'm a big nerd when it comes to toys. And being in a room with other people that share that passion and having the creative geniuses behind these properties there to just chat to, like, regular people. Like, they just, you know, they just come up and talk shop. And because everyone's so into it, it's just such a fun atmosphere. So that goes down in history as probably one of my most amazing events and experiences. But, you know, like, chatting to people, I know I met Gary Chalk, who voiced He-Man in He-Man, The New Adventures of He-Man. That was the cartoon series that followed, you know, the seminal 82 classic by Filmation that had 2 years. But, you know, I'd go just catch up with Gary Chalk at a con and get him to sign one of my New Adventures of He-Man action figures. And just those moments, you know, meeting Peter Cullen, voice of Optimus Prime, and
all
sorts of things. You know, they're moments that, and the people are so just down to earth. You know, they're in their element because they're talking to their fans, and they make it just such a normal experience. That to me is just a wonderful part of nerd culture, and being passionate about these things is being able to connect with I guess your childhood heroes or people that you really appreciate what they've done for these properties. So that those moments have just been magical.
Fantastic. Awesome. So, okay, that was 2011. Have you been back to San Diego since then, or
what's your next con? Yeah, I've been meaning to, and I was planning before sort of COVID hit was to get over to the US to go to PowerCon, which is convention. Yeah, run by Val Staples, as I mentioned. So every year he puts on a big convention just for He-Man, and it's like a 2-day thing. And I've never been over there for it, but I talked to a lot of people about the convention, and for He-Man enthusiasts, it's the thing to do. So I'd love to get over and experience that, because, you know, San Diego Comic-Con is wonderful, but it's this massive event.
It's too big. It's too big.
It's almost just too overwhelming. I've done that now, and I'm happy to have done that. For me, it's more about probably these niche events that they put on. Like, there's things like JoeCon and BotCon that have been around and come in and out. But that's for me probably the next place that I want to get to.
Nice. Do you mess with custom toys at all? Like, I only ask because I've been over to New York Comic Con a few times, and they've actually set up, you know, almost like a mini con within of guys doing custom stuff. And so I've got like an Eazy-E Skeletor.
Yes.
And
love it.
You know, these sort of things. I've got a Yoda with a paint can, and he's Make Peace, Not Wars, and I love some of that stuff. Do you mess with that sort of the customizable gear, or is it box fresh as original? Where's your spot?
Yeah, it's a really great question, and I love the fact, you know, we're talking this, because this is not something that comes up very often, and we have to go deep kind of have this conversation. Right? Yeah, which is fantastic. Look, primarily I collect the toys that I grew up with. So it's sort of more mm-hmm. box fresh, case fresh as they were released. But it's interesting. I've done myself a couple of customs and where they come from. Like if we go into the line Dino Riders by Tyco that came out between 86 and 89 or 87 and 89, there's a very classic dinosaur in that collection. So for those listeners that don't know what Dino Riders is, essentially they were dinosaurs that had armor on them and machine guns and laser guns and you could put little characters on them. And some of them were motorized and they'd walk. And they were beautiful toys. Like the Smithsonian Institute got Tyco to redo the dinosaur molds and they sold them in their museums
awesome.
As official authentic dinosaur toys, minus of course the laser cannons and weaponry. but one of the most iconic dinosaurs from that line is the T-Rex.
And yes, I had that as a boy.
Right. How good is it? Like,
it's so good.
Such a good toy, motorized, it walks, it's got all his armor on, it's got little aliens that go on it. Yeah, like so. And cool.
Did it come with Kronos? Was
it did come with, yeah, yeah, with a character called Kronos, which is a big lizard character in red. And he had like a bubble dome over his face. Like super, super cool. But the toy didn't resemble the box art. So the box art, and I'm looking at it right now, like the box art is this green and yellow dinosaur. And when you open it up, inside is this kind of gray colored dinosaur. So for example, I've gone and done a custom of that to paint it in box art colors.
Nice.
And I'll do that with a few of my toys. It's almost like they didn't give me what they promised on the packaging, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah, do it yourself.
And I've done that with a few of my Masters of the Universe. I've gone and customed a few things, but I'm not a super talented customizer. But I love those. I love those toys that you're talking about, where they sort of like they take a property, or they combine a couple of properties together. There's a guy that I follow. I think he's called Ahimo Adventures, and he does this line of customs. They're high-end customs called Alternative Heroes from the 90s. And he'll get like a character from Toxic Crusaders, the toy line, and kind of stick the head of one of those characters on a different body and create like a He-Man. Like an alternate He-Man, like he might have looked like if Playmates had picked up the license and done him in the 90s.
Okay.
And he's done Skeletors and he's done a Skeletor character, which has like the Krang brain in the stomach and like just mashed all these properties together.
Nice.
So I love them. They're really expensive to get because they're high end. They're packaged on a retro style blister card with all the artwork and all the design work. They're immaculately painted. And I think they'd set you back in around $300, $350 Australian.
Right.
But I love all that stuff. And I love the creativity that artists put in to these works. And they are almost sort of like these works of art on the fringe of toy collecting that you can go and get your lazy He-Man or, your He-Man as Mr. T, all those sorts of things that are out there. And they're just super, super cool.
One of my pride and joys, I tracked down the Beastie Droids, which is IG-88
nice.
And two Astromechs, but done up as the Beastie Boys.
Yes.
Wow.
With gold chains and everything.
Yep.
So cool. Part of the other reason I wanted to talk with you was Dino Riders, because when there was a brief segment on the show of you at home in your studio where you are now, and there were a couple of shots of Dino Riders, and I got so excited because – I want to know, how did you track them all down? Because I believe I have the Ankylosaurus and the Pteranodon, and that set me like that's my budget.
Yeah,
those things are so expensive. Have you got a hookup?
Look, Dino Riders has gone crazy, and it's one of these things. So with my Dino Riders collection, I think I started collecting those about 7 years ago, right?
Okay.
And I probably got in with a lot of them before this massive price jump. Now, just to put it in perspective, Dino Riders, like I said, they've got all these armor pieces that clip on and connect on. And so they're really hard to find all those bits, right? They got lost or they got broken, that sort of thing. So I collect Dino Riders twofold. I collect a loose one and a mint in box one. Now, that creates a big challenge. So back when I was sort of into Dino Riders hardcore, it was mostly eBay. So I'd be going on eBay and, picking up a box Dino Rider, getting it shipped here. A lot of them, I've got some that are, European versions, some that are US versions. Mm-hmm. and getting them here. And I got to the end. If you know your dino riders well enough, there's a in series two, there's a Brontosaurus, and the Brontosaurus is a good meter long, right? And it comes in a box that is just huge. It goes for about $1,000 if you were to get it loose. And I just never saw a box version. So I had to go to the US, eBay, bought one loose and got it shipped, and it came in this massive box. But then you get into season three, which is where they did Ice Age. They did four
yes.
Ice Age creatures, like a woolly mammoth and a saber-toothed tiger, right? But then they also did three dinosaurs. They did a Camarasaurus. They did a repaint of the Pteranodon in like a yellow and brown. And they did a new dinosaur that used the sculpt of the Triceratops. And I can't think of his scientific name, but they just call him the Bighorn. He's got this huge horn. That's wave three dinosaurs, and those things are super, super rare. I just had given up on collecting the boxed Brontosaurus because I wasn't going to ship that from the States. And wave three, I just had given up on. Mm. And one day I had a mate of mine who I know through the Lego community, a guy by the name of Nick Greenslade, and he had been asked by his friend's dad to sell off his toy collection. And what this guy had done is when he was buying toys for his son, he was like, you know, these are cool. I'll just buy myself one and put it in the cupboard, right? So so Nick was selling this guy's toy collection. And basically these were toys that he'd bought back in the 80s, put them in a cupboard, and they were mint. And the funny thing about this was it was literally 5 minutes down the road. No. And he goes, look, I'm going to put up this guy's Dino Riders collection. It's a pretty, pretty good collection. And he whipped out all of Series 3, so in box, the three Series 3 dinosaurs plus all of Ice Age. He whipped out the Bronto, like the Brontosaurus, which is in this meter-long box, and a few of the other really rare Wave 2 ones in box.
Were you
and
able to breathe?
Pretty much all the Dino Riders I needed to complete my collection.
Amazing.
So I dropped a lot of cash on those. As you can imagine, what the value of those box never open kind of Dino Riders are.
Mm.
But I was so close, and to have a local collection pop up down the street that could complete the collection was just a one in a million, right? And so, you know, I feel your pain in trying to collect Dino Riders because it's super, super hard now.
I've come in way too late.
Just look, if you need your Dino Rider fix, hook up a trip to Adelaide. Come through the collection. I've got a complete collection, and that hopefully will just tide you over.
Oh,
I'm going to hold you that.
That's a nice info.
So my question is, 90s, we got so many great knockoff cartoons that had epic toy series and stuff. I have a real soft spot for both Biker Mice from Mars and Street Sharks.
Mm. Yes.
Street Sharks.
Those guys were jawsome.
They were totally jawsome.
What are the more niche stuff, the weirdo shows that you've found toys from that you've got really cool collections? Like, I've got a Mondo Gecko from Ninja Turtles that I'm so proud of because that's an obscure one that I love.
Yeah, this is fascinating. So like I get into, you know, like it sounds weird now, like they probably sound niche now, but back in the 80s, the creativity you needed to put into your toys to get them out there, you know, to compete with what was on the shelves was incredible. And as you said, you know, the formula, you know, for Biker Mice or Street Sharks, it really took from what Ninja Turtles had done and tried to kind of copy it and put it out there. You know, the formula was you needed a cartoon to support your toy line, right? And if you could, as much merchandising, bed sheets, drink bottles, lunch boxes, all that stuff. And I think the success of the property goes to how much merchandising you had beyond the toys, because the toys were kind of the given. Like that was what, you know, that's why you had the cartoon was to support the toys.
Yeah.
And I think you've called out a few really good ones in terms of like Street Sharks, Biker Mice from Mars. You know, Captain Planet was probably its own thing. I don't think that was trying to copy too much. But back in the 80s, you had things like Warrior Beasts, Remco, you know, like they weren't knockoffs, but they were so inspired by He-Man. They were just riding on the coattails of Masters of the Universe in terms of their style. Galaxy Warriors, you know, Warrior Beasts. What we almost consider, you know, you get one for your birthday and you'd be like, oh, no, it's sort of like a He-Man knockoff.
That's
it's like,
right. Not what I wanted.
But I collect toys like Mask. Stands for Mobile Armored Strike Command. Right now, that was that I'm looking up at it now, there's like, you know, probably 40 vehicles. And that was a cross between Transformers and Dino Riders to some extent, done by Kenner, you know, who brought us, you know, Star Wars and a lot of great toy lines. But they were toys that you'd have a, you know, like a car, and it would transform into a aeroplane. And that was the concept, is these vehicles would have two options. You know, most people would have forgotten about Mask, but not really a bootleg, but it probably one of those lesser known toy lines that you would collect. Toxic Crusaders is another great example of something that, you know, if you think about Ninja Turtles or the genesis of Ninja Turtles, it was a comic book, like a dark independent comic book that really Mark Friedman, the kind of the licensing guy that worked with Eastman Laird on trying to market Ninja Turtles. He was really the brains behind turning that into the cartoon friendly kids property. And sure. Toxic Avenger, like that's an R-rated film by Troma Studios. For them to come along and go, you know what we're going to make into a toy? Toxic Avenger. We're going to rebrand it. It's going to be Toxic Crusaders. It's going to be there for kids. That's like a crazy concept to think about. So I almost see like the Toxic Crusader, it only got, you know, one wave of figures, nine figures, and I think five vehicles. But that is, to me, kind of like the epitome of using something that hit the big time and trying to kind of copy the formula. The other one that I think of is Bucky O'Hare. That was a toy Bucky line O'Hare. Done by Hasbro.
Wait, right? I have and never heard remember, of this.
Yeah, like very much. Like it was a Larry Harmer comic book that was done well before. And it was like kind of what can we take, turn into a cartoon, turn into a toy property, put out for lunchboxes. Again, didn't take off like Ninja Turtles, because Ninja Turtles was lightning in a bottle, hard to replicate. Mm. But that had, you know, a wave of figures done by Hasbro, a whole heap of vehicles. And you know, super cool to collect now. And I think what happens with a lot of toy collectors is you collect the big toy properties, you collect the Ninja Turtles, you collect the Masters of the Universe. And then if you kind of want to find something else to whet your appetite, you get into lines like that. Like He-Man collectors go into Warrior Beast, Ninja Turtles collectors go into Toxic Crusaders and Bucky O'Hare. So there's a lot of wonderful lines. I've probably only scratched the surface on this podcast that we're talking now, but there's so many that fall into that kind of almost B-grade category. Like this, Chuck Norris had a toy line of Army Commandos. Like it's just crazy to think of the stuff that was put out in that era.
I remember even like 70s stuff, like there was Fonzie, there was 6 Million Dollar Man, like all that sort of stuff. People, I mean, I don't know how, but I had them, and they were boyfriends of Barbies of mine.
Yeah.
It just, and when you were talking about custom making stuff, you know, and interchanging a Toxic Crusader's head onto He-Man's body or whatever, I just thought that is exactly what kids were doing. But then sometimes you get into trouble for destroying your toys, right? And your parents would be like, you're not getting a replacement. If you want to do that, that's up to you, but you're not getting a replacement. Where people are able to now live that out as adults, but do it, you know, not as haphazardly as kids, but do it beautifully and recreate something that a lot of people probably, when they hear about it, went, oh, I would have loved that as a kid. That would have been awesome. It's so fun that there's communities and places where people can do this and have the freedom and also have the audience of fellow enthusiasts. Now you are part, I should say, of an amazing podcast. It's been going for ages. Like you guys are well into the 170, 180 episodes, Toy Power Podcast. It's so listenable. You learn so much, but also it's just like, I mean, you've done exactly what podcasts are supposed to do. It's like you're sitting in with a bunch of mates having a chat, and it's so informative. How many years have you been doing it for now? Is it every week?
Yeah, we've been doing it for about 4 years. And as you say, we've cracked about 172 official episodes, but we've got bonus content in there as well that have its own numbering system. So yeah, we've probably hit the 180 mark. It's funny you say that you feel like you can sort of just, you're sitting in a room chatting or listening to your mates chat about toys. Because when Darren first pitched it to me, that was exactly what he wanted to convey. And we've been very conscious in, like, it's niche, right? Like, you know, it's probably not a podcast for kids, and kids can listen to it, but it might go a little bit over their heads. Mm-hmm. But it's as niche as it is, and the fact that we talk in depth about these properties, we want to make it really broad and appealing to anyone that wants to kind of relive their childhood, whether that be through listening to every episode week on week, or whether they pick out an episode that resonates with them when we chat about a particular property. So it was really the goal of what we've tried to do. And it was a fascinating journey, actually, the start of that podcast, because Darren came to me one day and said, look, I'd love to do a podcast with you about toys. And I sort of said to him, nah, I'm not interested in doing a podcast. I don't think anyone would listen to it. It's sort of not a thing for me. And it went quiet for probably a couple of years. And then I think podcasts became, you know, a bit more of a thing. And I was listening to the He-Man podcast, Roast Google Dinner by Val Staples and his team. And I got so much enjoyment out of it. And I sort of had this flip around that it was like, you know, I'm in a toy collecting community and I'm consuming a lot of stuff. But I think it's time for me to give something back to listeners or to the community and really do something that other people can enjoy. And hopefully we can build a community. So I became much more community minded. And I went back to Darren and said, look, I've been thinking about it. It's taken me 2 years to come around, but great idea. You're still interested in doing it. And he said, yep, I am. But we probably need a third person. And so we reached out to a sort of mutual friend that we were getting to know, Ben Sachs at the time, who we'd met at a number of the local cons, a couple of the toy trade days that we do here in Adelaide. And I was, I remember being so hesitant and thinking, he's not going to want to do this podcast. I remember how I reacted. It's a lot of work. There's no, you know, what do you get out of it? And I tentatively sent in this little text saying, hey, Darren and I are thinking of starting a podcast. Do you want to join? And his response was immediate, and it was so enthusiastic. It had all the emojis conveying enthusiasm. So we locked in Ben. We had three. We'd set up to record our first episode. And another mate of ours who we're getting to know through the toy collector community, Frank Allen, he reached out to Ben, funnily enough, and said, hey, Ben, I'm thinking of starting up a toy podcast. Do you want to join? And Ben said, hey, mate, look, we've just started one. We're about to record. Why don't you come on ours? And that's how it was created. It was
awesome.
Pretty fortuitous in the way it played out. And like, we're just so happy that, you know, one, we've got listeners, right? Mm. One, we're able to get, you know, guests that come on and, you know, we had the head of Super 7, Brian Flynn, come on and talk, you know, toys and what it's like to be a sort of an indie toy manufacturer in this day and age. But we just love getting together. Like, even if we weren't recording, right, we would get together and have the same sorts of conversations that we have now. So we get so much enjoyment out of, you know, meeting up and talking toys that we're just so happy that there's an audience for that and people listen. And we've created a community. Like, we've got a Discord for all our patrons. And just to see that flourish and to see the interactions now on that happen even without us, that like-minded collectors have come together and there's this place where we can meet and chat toys and chat this stuff. It blows my mind how wonderful that community can be.
You must have enjoyed because I remember, when was it? It was early on into Lego Masters being screened, sorry, season two being screened, the one that you're in. And there was a special, you guys had a Lego Masters special, and there was a bit where you just sort of sat back and I can't remember what they were talking about though, but it was like you couldn't really comment on it because obviously you knew the outcome, but they were, I think they might have been talking about who they all wanted to win if it wasn't going to be you. And it was just such a nice chat, and you could tell that they were genuinely not only like 100% behind you, but just loved watching the show as well. And I think I can imagine your community for Toy Power Podcast just be like, yeah, everything you guys are saying, that's exactly what we're feeling as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because obviously, first and foremost, we're fans. Yeah. We're just like our listeners. You know, we happen to get on a podcast and chat, but we try and embody a spirit of positivity and fun, not dwell too much on the negative aspects of things that can pop up, and be all about the nostalgia and reliving what made this hobby fun, or what made toys fun, or what made these properties enjoyable. Mm. And that first and foremost is really our mantra that we try and achieve. And so you get that passion in the show. And I had the exact same experience as I sat back to that episode that you're talking to and kind of listened to them. And I felt really proud, because it wasn't all about a one-eyed, you know, Trent supporters.
No.
Of course, they're a little bit biased, but it's about the show. It's about the enjoyment of the show and really enjoying what other people have brought to the show. Mm. And like I asked the question in when we did the final episode, like, guys, just tell us what your favorite build was. You don't have to say the pirate ship, because I really want to hear what you guys thought and get your view. And not everyone voted for the pirate ship, you know, which is fantastic, because it shows that diversity in what resonated with them, what they enjoyed.
Yep.
And I think, like, the vibe of Lego Masters was, yeah, cool. Like, if that's what you're into and that's what you like, good on you. Like, there's no wrong answers here, right? We're all entitled to our opinions. And it's that's the essence of it. Like, there's no wrong answers. No one's going to gang up on someone for liking Power Rangers more than Ninja Turtles. Embrace your Street Sharks. You know, we had Davey on, he's a big Street Sharks fan. Davey from Days Video Graveyard, who's got, you know, Street Shark tattoos. And you know, we kind of joke about it lovingly, but, you know, those toys are cool. You know, like,
they're cool.
Who doesn't want a giant, massive shark? and funnily enough, while we're on the topic of Street Sharks, Vin Diesel did, like, the promo for Toy Fair in, like, the early 90s. And there's, like, this video of Vin Diesel, like, selling Street Sharks. It's hilarious.
Really? I'm going to have to go and watch this after we finish. This is amazing.
I don't understand how people can still question that man's nerd cred.
Yeah.
Like, he's legit. I've talked with him about D&D. Like, I interviewed him many years ago for, what was it, Pitch Black. No, not Pitch. Yeah, I think it was way back then. And it was right at the time when, you know, he'd come off Saving Private Ryan and a few things, but there was a bit of buzz about him. And even at that stage, he was talking about Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
And how if he got to do a sequel to Pitch Black, he'd want it to become more and more D&D. And he didn't really get to do that for the second one, but he did for the third, Riddick.
Yes.
I mean, you got to give that guy love.
That's so cool.
He formed a video game company so he could play video games starring himself. You know,
living the dream.
That's commitment to nerd life.
It is.
So when you're building and stuff at home and you're following the instructions, do you do that with anything on? Do you listen to podcasts? Do you watch something? Do you have or is it a quiet sort of meditative space? What's your build setup?
Yeah, so for builds I do with the kids, it's just generally quiet time with the children. And so a lot of my Lego building is with the kids. Because I've got a 7 and a 4-year-old, two boys, and they're right into Lego at the moment.
Awesome.
If I'm building a set for myself, and I had a bit of Lego burnout, I must be honest, from Lego Masters. I haven't done a lot of building since I've been back.
That's fair.
But when I have been doing that, it's generally I put on some music or I put on some podcasts. So I love listening to Roast Google Dinner. They had a bit of a hiatus a couple of years back, but they're sort of back now. But I love putting on, you know, other toy podcasts, Dave's Video Graveyard, that sort of thing. Mm. For my TV viewing, I'm a focus viewer. So I won't kind of have TV going in the background. I really, when
Fair.
I watch TV or movies, I love to be 100% present. So, But, music and podcasts.
Yeah.
What is your go-to TV viewing at the moment?
At the moment, so I kind of don't have Netflix or Amazon at the moment. So I'm browsing the kind of the free stuff, right, to see what I can find. And I'm on SBS On Demand is kind of where I go to. So I'm watching a show called 000 at the moment, which is really, really good. I'm up to episode 3 of that. Stars Gabriel Byrne. He's in there. And the actor's name I forget, but the guy who played Valerian in the Luc Besson film Valerian, he's in there too. It's actually an Italian production.
Oh, really?
That's about sort of, it's got like the drug, you know, the cocaine trafficking. So there's South American drug cartel elements, there's the Italian mafia that's involved, and there's an American shipping company that's involved, and it follows and links those three stories together. So that's fantastic. I'm also watching a show there called, I think it's called Hanan, which is about the Spanish invasion of Mexico and goes through sort of, you know, the way that plays out. And so I'm up to a couple of episodes. And I'm watching a show called Reprisal as well, which is this sort of rockabilly sort of gangster style of film.
That's pretty cool.
Kind of cool as well. So that's sort of my viewing at the moment. Because I sort of canned Netflix a couple of months back. So it's just interesting to try and see what else is kind of available.
There's
out
heaps
there.
Of stuff on SBS On Demand. I view ABC iView's got heaps of great stuff on there as well. I guess the only thing with those two is you kind of have, particularly with iView, you've got to kind of watch them because otherwise they go.
They do go.
So once you started a series, you've got to watch it to the end.
Finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a show there that I really wanted to watch called Killing Eve that I heard good things about. And
I kind
of loaded it up.
It's good.
And it's like, oh, it's only up to season four or whatever. They didn't have season one. So
it's
missed the boat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I got a bit behind Killing Eve as well, and the exact same thing happened. And I went, oh, no, what am I going to do now? But there's always options. There's always options. Trent, thank you so much for coming on and having a chat. This has been super fascinating. And, you know, we've not only enjoyed you on Lego Masters, but we've enjoyed Toy Power Podcast, and we've really enjoyed having this chat. So, Tom, what do you reckon we force him on sometime in the future again?
Yeah, whenever you want to come and talk toys, I would love to have you on again.
Look, I've had so much fun today. I'd love to come back. It's just so much fun. This is really the vibe, you know, that we try and emulate. So, you know, credit to you guys for creating such a fun podcast and where we can just, you know, chat what we love.
Yep.
And I think that's really, really important to getting to the crux of why we do this. So I would love to come back anytime you'd have me.
Fantastic.
Well, look, once we can all come out and play, likewise, you come up to Sydney, come and head into our studios and you can check out my toy collection in there.
He's got a bit of
a
collection.
Wonderful, can't wait.
Yeah. Trent, thank you.
No worries at all. Pleasure, guys.